Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impact these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Before we get started, if you are loving this podcast, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a five-star review and share this episode with your friends. All right. Well, today we're going to be chatting about East Coast cannabis and exploring the emerging opportunities. Our first guest has been in the cannabis industry for well over a decade. He is the co-founder of Native Roots in Colorado and is now bringing his latest cannabis dispensary concept, Greatest Hits Cannabis Co., to the East Coast in Massachusetts. Please welcome Mr. Rhett Jordan.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And as always, I am pleased to welcome back our Chief Knowledge Officer of New Frontier Data, Mr. John Caguia.
Delighted to be back, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Rhett, this is an exciting new venture you're off to. Walk us through kind of the concept of Greatest Hits and why Massachusetts?
Well, those are both weighted questions. took years for me to figure out why and what I was doing and why I wanted to do it. So let's just start with Greatest Hits. You know, through my career of brand building and cannabis kind of liberation, as I call it, through the country and starting in Colorado as my home base and my home state, I just found I had an affinity with mixing my my love for entertainment, music, and just kind of lifestyle with my cannabis brand. And it started with Native Roots ultimately, and we began becoming predominant in the community, throwing events and concerts and sponsoring things and really just trying to get involved in the community. On my second pass at creating a brand this time around, I decided instead of hinting around the point and kind of using it as a marketing plot, I wanted to be about it. I wanted to represent a brand that actually lives in the culture of the people. So we took it one step further and we decided that, you know, the one correlation that kind of connected all of the dots in kind of cannabis culture, cannabis lifestyle, and just kind of all of our lives through the years of legalization has really been music and the music industry and how that plays into our lives, the memories it creates. And it's just like with alcohol or with other substances, we tend to use them in situations where we're trying to enjoy ourselves and relax and kind of free our minds. And I really found that the consumer that I was dealing with was always trying to figure out a way to become more of a part of that culture. So Greatest Hits really became a representation of my concept to really bring cannabis into a more cultured and community lifestyle.
How has it been in comparison to working in, you know, Colorado, as far as just Colorado being such a more mature market now?
You know, I mean, honestly, the markets are very similar in a lot of ways. The regulatory process, although open, is still limited. There is Metric, which as an operator we use in Colorado, and a lot of the same systems. And really, we're seeing a lot of parallels from what happened in Colorado over a decade to what's happening in Massachusetts over what's going to be a decade or more. It just moves a little slower in the East Coast due to the regulatory processes. So what we're seeing is a market go, and also I'd say there's quite a bit of difference between when we started operating in 2010 and beginning to build the culture around cannabis in Colorado versus where the industry as a whole is at right now. Sophistication is higher. There's a significant amount more players. There's a lot of public money pouring into the industry, which creates a new dynamic for any startup industry whatsoever in any new state. So you're not going to see the organic slow growth like you did in Colorado, where it went to 2,000 dispensaries and down and up and a lot of those kind of waves. What you're seeing in Massachusetts is more of a sophisticated business owner coming in, opening a business or finding investors or operators that have those. And so you're kind of skipping some of those organic growth phases. Not to say that's a bad thing, because it's honestly good for the consumer, and it's actually kind of helping drive professionalism in the industry. But I definitely see a lot of parallels between the two markets. Obviously, Colorado, having been through multiple waves of product cost variances and dispensary and licensing waves, has become a much more kind of stable and predictable market, whereas Massachusetts has still got some of those early on industry hurdles that it's getting over, regulatory changes, et cetera, that are kind of still shaping it. So I think they're very similar. I think that Massachusetts is kind of like a 2.0 version of what you're seeing in a startup market these days, where you have a heavy amount of sophistication and capital pouring into an industry, but still a lot of entrepreneurs that are giving it their first shot. So I'm really enjoying the East Coast and Massachusetts so far.
Amazing. John, before I move on, any burning questions you have for Rhett?
Yeah, you know, I love this idea of kind of going all in at this intersection of cannabis and music. There's been such a long kind of narrative arc, whether you're going back to the Dead and the go-go 60s to hip hop today and that deep connectivity. From your perspective, what is it about cannabis and music? Why is it so transcendent across virtually every musical genre and virtually every type of consumer? What is it about that link?
Well, I truly believe that the plant holds magical capabilities of open-mindedness. And I think that cannabis as a whole and the way it reacts with our receptors and our bodies and our endocannabinoid systems really drives creativity out of us and creates kind of a wavelength that kind of opens up some of our unapproached brainwaves that are kind of creating and narrowing in on some of this artistic essence that I think has become so linked to each other, like you said. I think that there's also something to be said about the cultural use of cannabis. Its kind of black market and illegality over the last several years has created, 100 years, has created a kind of a bad boy effect to it, whereas the music community and a lot of the artistic community would use it as a way to kind of also rebel against society and show their rebellion. So I think that there's numerous different aspects to it. I think from a cultural standpoint, it's kind of been built in as this kind of recreational kind of taboo substance that was used by musicians as a rebellious trait. I think it's got a creative element to it that, 100% adds and creates, new energy and new growth to the mind. And I think it's also got a lot of medicinal benefits to it as well that honestly, people want to relax when they're listening to their music. They want to relax when they're enjoying themselves and they're not at work. And I think that cannabis actually, the relaxation effect and a lot of the anti-inflammatoriness, just kind of the nature of the plant, allows for people to connect with it.
So true.
It's just so many parallels to how this plant affects our lives, our culture, our minds, our bodies, everything. It's just become, it's quite nice to be able to actually kind of focus on them now and really kind of engage with the consumers and see how they're enjoying it.
That's great. Well, moving on, the Marijuana Moment reported Massachusetts adult use marijuana sales officially exceed 3 billion state reports.
Wow.
I know, it's amazing. Since its inception in 2018, Massachusetts has sold more than $3 billion in cannabis. This news comes just 8 months after the commission reported that sales had exceeded $2 billion. And even in some producers, even as some producers seek greener pastures in nation adult markets, such as New Jersey, there's still plenty of room to grow in more established markets. Rhett, what are some key factors that impact the trajectory of a state market?
Well, I mean, legalization is the number one factor, right? And how the state goes about creating a licensing model that allows for enterprise to open. So whether you're going medical first and your state is just kind of opening its mind to the medicinal benefits, or whether you're going full recreational and you're going to try to treat it as close to alcohol as possible, we're seeing a lot of different approaches from different states. So the way the legislation works and the way that the licensing bodies end up rolling out the licenses truly dictates the initial growth of a market. Once you get past that factor and you found a model that actually is functional, I think at that point in time, it's a matter of kind of demographic, population. And what we're seeing on the East Coast is, on the West Coast, you see a highly developed cannabis market coming to California for over 50 years. On the East Coast, you're seeing a highly underground black market that has been, you know, importing cannabis from across the country or having very small kind of underground cannabis grows. So the level of access to cannabis on the East Coast is much different than it is on the West Coast. So what you're seeing is a hugely populated land body with very little access to any black market product, and a multitude of different business operations opening up with different, you know, variances of products. And I think that you're just seeing what is the sales demonstrating how supportive America is of legalization as a whole, but especially how the East Coast was ready for recreational and medicinal cannabis, no question.
So true. John, anything to add to that?
You know, I think Massachusetts is such a great example of how, in many respects, demand will supersede all. So, you know, I remember the start of legalization, the legalization experiment in Massachusetts. People were saying everything from the energy regulations are going to make it too costly to grow. Consumers are not going to participate. The social equity program is a complete disaster. This program is doomed to failure. The regulators are moving too slowly, which is creating too large of a window for the illicit market. And so when this finally goes legal, the legal market is really going to struggle. And to a certain extent, some of those things were true early on. But for the operators who weathered that storm or who are coming online now, you know, the strength of these sales show that, yeah, consumers don't care. Like if you're giving them access to a high quality product that's increasingly cost competitive against the legal market, they will come into the stores and buy. And so, you know, I think it's been a really affirmative story about, particularly as we go into these East Coast markets where the regulations are going to be profoundly complicated. I think there was a lot of gray spaces to operate in the early markets on the West Coast that we're not going to see on the East Coast. I think the regulatory nature of places like New York and New Jersey, where you're dealing with very, very strong competing interests, are going to lead to regulations unlike we've seen anywhere else in the country. And that's led to a lot of apprehension about what it will mean for the legal market. But I think Massachusetts is an early indication of, even in these environments where you're dealing with very, very deeply entrenched interests, very complicated regulations, some elevated kind of startup costs relative to what we saw on the West Coast, even with all of those factors, if the product is good and it's cost competitive, consumers are going to show up, and they're going to show up in droves.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that most of the operators you'll meet in the industry at this point that have dealt with these early on markets that are in the Oklahomas or the Californias that just decided to release as many licenses as possible will tell you that the regulatory processes are welcomed, and hurdles, the barriers to entry are welcomed, because it honestly creates a sustainable marketplace. And that's really what we're all going for. And even though the barriers to entry are maybe a little higher than they have been, you should have expected that on the East Coast, right? I mean, it is the East Coast. Everything's barrier to entry is higher on the East Coast. So, you know, I personally, as an entrepreneur that started with one plant in his basement when I started, you know, Native Roots 15 years ago, you know, understand the complications of getting into a business, but going through those trials and tribulations of Colorado over licensing and then under licensing and all of the cities and jurisdictions changing the rules on you, you kind of come to realize that if you can get a system that's functional like Massachusetts, which I think is very functional, and even if it takes longer than you expected, you're very fortunate to be there because you're happy to work within parameters that are actually sustainable.
Well, just speaking of just different jurisdictions and different areas, I read a couple of articles about your newest dispensary, and a lot of them had quoted that the town and the community really supported this from day one of you starting this and opening this dispensary.
I mean, Dudley, Massachusetts is where we call home base in Massachusetts, and it's a place where my partner Joey Velotico is from, born and raised, and his brother Jay Velotico, and they have 50-year roots. You know, own the Italian restaurant in town, and it's really nice to see communities start to embrace instead of be terrified. A lot of the initial communities that we went into, and still to this day, put out the most stringent application processes and the most intensified business ownership processes ever. And like I said, I welcome them, but also you got to get to a point where you wonder, do they not realize the amount of jobs and economic growth we're bringing to their towns? Do they not realize the degradation of all the bars and liquor stores that they've licensed without even questioning it? And we're bringing a safer alternative to a recreational drug to, you know, into the community that also has incredibly beneficial medical benefits. And typically are run better than most of the businesses in these towns. So for me, it's nice to finally find a town that was open-minded to the way we approached them and understood that there was going to be a community benefit from our business and really got behind us. So we've been very fortunate and blessed to have a town that gets behind it. I know a lot of people in the industry are still suffering from communities that are just afraid of the unknown. And I challenge them to look at what is known. Look at the crime statistics, the violence statistics, the DUI statistics. Look at all of the numbers throughout the country and base your decision-making on facts rather than misinformation and propaganda. But, you know, specifically, our three locations are in great places in Mass. We're right on the border of Connecticut, but we're focusing on the southern central Mass area, Webster, kind of that whole area. And there's just a lack of access down there as well. So we were super happy to be able to bring that and start building. We're building a very large cultivation facility with 100,000 square feet of canopy and a large manufacturing wing as well. So we just can't wait to bring, you know, all of the quality and intellectual property that I've been building for God knows how many years to try to create the best products for the patients and the consumers and to really start to express that on the East Coast. It's getting exciting for sure.
That's awesome. It was just something that stood out to me. I just saw it mentioned in multiple different places. And I was like, wow, that's really incredible.
Is the cultivation facility going to be in Dudley?
Yeah, the facility is actually in Dudley. And what we actually did is we bought a 200-year-old mill building that had been sitting vacant for almost 30 years now. And made the town a promise that we were going to fill it with jobs and revitalize it and revitalize the entire neighborhood. And I think that that's something that really stood out to them is, you know, like who else is going to move into a 200-year-old mill, spend an immense amount of money restoring it, and then also be able to offer 200 to 400 jobs in the community that are highly skilled, high paying jobs. I mean, I really feel like the more these towns start to realize what we're trying to do, they realize that there's a huge amount of community and economic benefit for everybody. So, but it's a very cool building. There was actually coffins made for the Civil War in this building. I mean, it's got incredible history. So it's definitely got to be a big part of our marketing and just kind of an explanation of what our goal was. It's funny because my lawyer, Nick Adamopoulos from Lakeshore Legal, in Webster, Mass, who's also a resident and local there, brought his father, actually, it was one of the first times I had this realization, is when he brought his father into the building to walk it with us as we were doing some walkthroughs. And his father let us know that he had worked where we were standing in the middle of the building for 25 years of his life. And that, you know, he remembers the day that he got fired when they outsourced all the labor to China from, it was an Ethan Allen manufacturing facility for their furniture. And he remembers the day that they all got laid off because they outsourced everything to China. And he started crying and he just said, you know, I'm so happy you guys are bringing life back to the mill and back to this town. And it really just, it shows how much it means to the community when you really start to engage with them and talk to them about the what's happened in some of these smaller towns and how these businesses are really bringing life back to them.
That just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, it gave me goosebumps too. It was hugely impactful on me, to say the least.
I'm sure. Well, just getting back to kind of the East Coast market, which East Coast market are you watching the most closely? Or do you think
I'm watching every East Coast market very closely? I mean, let's be honest with you. I'm a liberator in my soul, so I keep track of all of them. I'm really excited that New Jersey got up and running. I think New York is super exciting. The way they're trying to roll it out is a bit confusing, but I'm proud that they're even taking the steps to get it going faster and faster, it seems. I think when Florida goes recreational, it's going to be a monster. And we all know that. So I've been keeping very close tabs on that. But, you know, all up and down the Eastern Seaboard, I've just been so impressed by some of the movement. And, you know, I'm really proud of all of the industry leaders that are kind of lobbying and help to push education as a platform to try to educate these lawmakers and get the fear out of society so that we could actually really start to get momentum on the East Coast. But, I, you know, I'm keeping an eye on every single state that's talking about it right now.
John, which East Coast markets are you watching the most?
I was actually going to ask Greta a trick or maybe an unfair question. So if you weren't in Massachusetts and you had to pick between, say, New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, Florida, I think, is going to be a little bit slow to come online. Which of these other three would you have pushed into first?
Honestly, I mean, just due to the nature of the licensing schematic, Virginia is a very attractive model, you know, and it's in a place where very, very little access exists. And so for me, having the ability to help so many people with such little access is a huge thing. But I think that's up and down the Eastern Seaboard. I think, be honest with you, New Jersey and Virginia in the short term are going to really blow some minds.
You know, I lived in Virginia for 30 years before moving into DC. And if you'd have told me even 2 years ago that we would be where we are now with recreational cannabis in that state, I would never have believed it. It's incredible how quickly that they've been moving.
Well, it's just incredible that it's taken this long for lawmakers to realize the people have been asking for this for so long. It's just it's kind of a breath of fresh air when you actually see it happen, right? I mean, you don't think it's going to happen, but I mean, more than 60% of America wants legalization. This has been around for 50 years. Why are we putting people in jail for this? Why are we fighting it still? The changes need to happen as fast as possible. So, but it's very cool. Yeah, I love to see Virginia show its colors. This is awesome.
Amazing. Well, before we wrap, any final thoughts or any predictions for the East Coast for 2022 or 2023?
You know, I see a lot of growth, but I see a lot of struggle as well coming. And I urge people to care about the consumer and not just care about their bottom lines, and to spend time creating products that are worthy of being sold, and really to start to focus more on the consumer than the bottom line, because I think that is something, as cannabis becomes more corporate and a lot more public money comes into it, that, you know, is being left in the dirt. And I see that in emerging markets. People are so worried about getting open and making money that they forget what they're doing there in the first place. So I challenge the industry to focus on the consumer a bit more in 2020. You know, too, in 2023, and make sure that they're not forgotten during this eruption of economic growth.
You know what? That was going to be my last question, but because we have been so consumer focused at New Frontier Data, I wanted to get your take on this, because I know when we look at, you know, the cannabis consumer in Sacramento to LA to San Diego, they're all wildly different. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like the difference between a Massachusetts East Coast consumer is to a Colorado?
Oh, they're wicked great consumers. They love their cannabis on the East Coast, and so I've found myself quite embraced. But the constant evolution of the product is really what the consumer complains about the most, I think, is just like access to quality versus just access. But from the most part, I honestly have been so embraced by the communities and the people, and I realize the East Coast is actually maybe going to give the West Coast a run for its money when it comes to cannabis consumption and consumers in general, because they all love it and they're all excited about it. And it's new there still, you know? So I feel like that kind of fresh take on a new market is really driving excitement in the East Coast.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I feel like the East Coast is still craving, you know, the beverages and all the stuff that they have on the West Coast that we just don't have access to in a lot of places. So.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to see them come out in a much more controlled and regulated way on the East Coast versus California, which has been the Wild West since day one. So I think that you're going to have a little bit more structure to how these brands roll out and products roll out. But I think that the quality and the the ability to hit the masses and the markets out here is going to intensify quickly. So it's very exciting.
Amazing. John, what are your any predictions for the East Coast?
Well, just building on what Retta said, you know, I think one of the misconceptions about the East Coast is that the reason why the laws have been so much slower to change on the East Coast was because demand wasn't there. And, you know, I think once these markets start cooking with gas, as I think Rhett was dead on, you know, the regulatory process is going to make it a little bit slower to get up and running than we might have seen previously. But once these markets are up and running, I'm absolutely confident that they are going to give the West Coast a run for their money.
Well, look at Massachusetts. It's got less than 7 million people and it just hit $3 billion already. I mean, it's catching up with California and it's a much, much smaller state. The people really are embracing it out there, but they're ready for quality. So that's what we intend to bring them at Greatest Hits. That's why we're the greatest.
Amazing. All right. Well, before we wrap up, Rhett, we give all of our guests the opportunity to give a shout out to someone in the industry you think is doing something great. So the floor is yours.
You know, I'd like to just give a shout out to everyone that's dedicated their lives to this industry. It doesn't need to be a person. I honestly take huge amount of joy meeting new and regular individuals that are coming over from serious markets and trying to professionalize our market, increase, and really just dedicating their lives to this industry. I just got to say, I think that America has come a long ways over the last 10 years, obviously, since we were the first state in Colorado to get legalized. And I just see more and more beautiful people coming into this industry and coming from 10 years ago when we could barely even get someone off their couch to come work as a bud tender. And now we're seeing CEOs of the largest companies and we're seeing, doctors begin to start to endorse cannabis for cancer and for other reasons that they can't even technically. I mean, you're starting to see people risk their lives to really kind of get behind this industry. So I just want to give a shout out to everyone that's really putting their life behind this and doing it in a way that educates and helps other people. It is the purpose of this plant and that's why we're here.
I love it. Well, thank you both so much for your time. And thank you to our listeners for joining us at Canna Week. Again, please be sure to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. I am your host, Heather Wittstein, and I will see you next time.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.